is VOA News via remote. I'm Laurel Bowman. Explosions rocked the southern Ukrainian city of Mykolaiv on Saturday, the mayor said, at the end of the week in which Russian missiles have slammed into an apartment block and a shopping mall in other cities, killing dozens of people. Air raid sirens sounded in the Mykolaiv region, which borders the vital Black Sea port of Odessa. Striking Paris airport workers said on Saturday they would stage another walkout at the French capital's main international hub from July 8th through 10th to press their pay demands, signaling further disruption for early summer travelers. Ground staff at Charles de Gaulle Airport had staged a series of strikes to demand a wage hike to cushion the pain of inflation, emboldened by booming demand for air travel and staff shortages caused in part by the COVID-19 pandemic. Thousands of Australians joined raucous protests across the country on Saturday against the U.S. Supreme Court's overturning of a woman's constitutional right to an abortion. The Supreme Court last week overturned the landmark 1973 Roe v. Wade ruling, restoring the ability of individual states to ban abortion. An Iranian-flagged tanker seized by Greece in April, part of whose cargo was confiscated by the U.S., was being towed to the port of Piraeus on Saturday, Greek Coast Guard officials said. This after Greek authorities approved its release. For over 2 months, the Iranian-flagged Lana has been anchored off the Greek island of Evia in a diplomatic impasse, which strains Athens' relations with Tehran amid growing tensions between Iran and the United States. For more stories, please visit us at voanews.com. This is VOA News. China will loosen entry restrictions on U.S. citizens, allowing entrance in case of transit via a third country. Notices issued by the Chinese embassy in Washington said it's a relaxing of rules imposed in Beijing's strive to curb COVID-19. China's dynamic COVID-zero policy, which aims to minimize the risk of infected travelers arriving from abroad, has resulted in many barriers to international travel, from the renewal of passports for Chinese citizens to tough quarantine requirements upon arrival. In one of his first legislative acts, newly inaugurated Philippines President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. has vetoed a bill sponsored by his lawmaker sister that would have created a special economic zone north of the capital, the presidential office said Saturday. Marcos took office on June 30th after winning the May election by a landslide. He has inherited over $200 billion in government debt, driven by his predecessor's pandemic response and the impact on the economy. At least 5 people were killed and over 80 injured by a magnitude 6.1 earthquake in southern Iran early on Saturday, state media reported, with the area also hit soon after by 2 strong quakes of up to 6.3 in magnitude, some 24 tremors, 2 with magnitudes of 6.3 and 6.1 respectively, followed the 2 a.m. local time quake that flattened a village near Iran's Gulf Coast. The German city of Hamburg will ration hot water for private households and limit the maximum heating temperature in the event of an acute gas shortage, its environment senator said, as Germany braces for possible outages of Russian gas imports. Germany moved last month to stage 2 of its 3-tier emergency gas plan after Russia reduced deliveries via the Nord Stream 1 pipeline. More than 24 crew on an engineering vessel with 30 people on board were missing after it snapped in 2 in waters off Hong Kong as Tropical Storm Chaba passed through, authorities said. 3 crew members were rescued and search and rescue operations were continuing for others about 300 kilometers southwest of the city, according to the Hong Kong Government Flying Service. For more on this and all the stories we're covering, visit us at voanews.com. We also have an app that you can download. Just search for VOA News. Reporting via remote, I'm Laurel Bowman for VOA News. We'll be right back.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
A meeting of a central working committee where all the affected unions made presentations to their peers. We are not going to sit back and wait for the election to come before we begin to have some problems solved. No.
The Nigeria Labour Congress calls on the government to start resolving security challenges, university teachers strike, and the energy crisis.
Next country, I hear that they are now amending the constitution to ensure that the protocol on democracy and good governance, they can amend it so that it is written in national constitutions, not just written, but implemented.
The Commission of the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, will have a new leader in the first week of July.
We saw it to motivate people and beating people the way they were doing. We saw the video. We need to speak about this. State must be dealt with by the European Union. Spain must be punished for this thing. Morocco must be attacked on the African Union.
And the African Bar Association plans to petition the International Criminal Court over the deaths of African migrants in Morocco. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Nigeria, the Labour Congress is calling on the government to immediately resolve security challenges, ongoing strike actions embarked upon by the Academic Staff Union of Universities, and the energy crisis. The group that represent workers in the country says they will embark on mass demonstrations to shut down the country if there's no resolution of the standoff when the two-week ultimatum elapses. The threat of a strike is also backed by the National Union of Local Government Employees. This after the group expressed concern about prevailing economic conditions, including the sharp rise in the price of goods and services. Officials of the government say the administration is committed to resolving problems facing the country. For more on the ultimatum calling on the government to act, I reach Emma Ogbuaja. He is the General Secretary of the Nigeria Labour Congress.
The protest was a decision of our Central Working Committee and is born out of our frustration with regards to the four-month-old strike of the Academic Staff Union of Universities and other unions in the tertiary education sector. An ultimatum was given to take the same action if our communique was not respected. So we had wanted a supervening superior government official like the Office of the Secretary of Government of the Federation or the Vice President or the Chief of Staff to the President to then take up the issue for coordination.
When do you plan or when does Labour plan to embark on the strike?
We have a 2 weeks window for them to resolve the issue at hand, or the strike would then the one day national action to signal our ultimate move to more concrete action will then take place.
Some Nigerians are saying, although what the Nigeria Labour Congress is doing is laudable, they don't see anything changing. How do you respond to that?
The clear response is it will be irresponsible for us to fold our hands and do nothing. And nothing ventured, nothing gained. We did the seeming reinvigoration of the negotiation process with the government happened after we issued our notice to embark on the action we did. And that was what led to a change in the modus they were using to treat the situation. First with Ghana, there was substantial movement in the negotiations that the whole issue now rests with the government to take a position. The negotiations have been concluded. It's for the government part to assent to what its negotiating team has presented. And we felt that was dragging. So it's not a function of sitting and doing nothing. No, we need to do something. And organized labor is a strong entity. The people that keeps Nigeria working. And if the entire people that keep Nigeria working say they will shut down the country, any responsible government will pay some attention. So clearly we expect something to give. We expect something to happen.
Are you being joined by other groups on this decision that you've made? And do you think the ultimatum you've issued to the government will be a catalyst to the government to act? Because some people are suggesting that Nigerians appear to be anticipating the next election, so things happening right now might not necessarily gain the traction that you need to gain for the government to act. How do you respond to that?
It will be unfair for us to fold our hands and wait for the next elections before our children will go to school. It will be unfair for us to fold our hands and do nothing and wait for the next elections before our members who have been owed salaries will get paid. Anybody embarking on that type of voyage is not being sincere. But we are hoping that the discontent, the disquiet that has been created, the dislocations and anger and frustration can genuinely be brought up by people with regards to the elections and translate to votes in the proper direction of people that have capacity, of people that have the passion, the determination to turn the place around and not waiting for vote buying and funny attitudes. So as a responsible organization, the trade union center at that, and having had a meeting of a central working committee where all the affected unions made presentations to their peers. We're not going to sit back and wait for the election to come before we begin to have some problems solved. No.
Emma Ogboaja is the General Secretary of the Nigeria Labour Congress. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. The Commissioner of the Economic Community of West African State, or ECOWAS, will have a new leader in the first week of July. Dr. Omar Aliu Touré, a Gambian diplomat, becomes the president of the 15-member regional body. Analysts say the new leadership will be confronted with finding a solution to a slide in democracy following recent coups in Mali, Guinea, and Burkina Faso, as well as an attempted coup in Guinea-Bissau. ECOWAS has a zero-tolerance policy for the forceful overthrow of a legitimately elected government. This, as critics say, the outgoing leadership did not do enough to entrench democracy. They cite constitutional amendments in Guinea and Mali, which led to public protests and subsequent coups. For analysis of and expectations for the new ECOWAS leadership, I reach Paul Ijeme. He is a global affairs analyst, a former war correspondent, an independent consultant on corporate strategic communications, media, peace and security, and elections.
I think he has his job cut out for him because the outgoing management of ECOWAS have really not done themselves a favor in terms of the number of unfinished assignments and then presiding over regression of democracy. The last 4 years of the president of the commission and then almost 2 years of the chairmanship of Ghana. They have not, you remember, you know, there is Mali, there is Guinea, there is Burkina Faso. These are ECOWAS member states that are now governed by the military junta. Those coups that have happened, the approach, there hasn't been any strategy, there hasn't been any vision, there hasn't been any political will, actually, apart from just slamming sanctions and you know, a few mediation attempts. It hasn't worked.
Some people are of the view that the criticisms being leveled against the outgoing leadership of ECOWAS are misplaced because the entire sub-region appears to have plunged into insecurity with three coups and one attempted reported coup in Guinea-Bissau. So the criticisms, they said, are unjustified. What's your reaction to that?
This is an ECOWAS that has received and received international acclaim for peacekeeping and conflict management and resolution. There's an ECOWAS that ended the civil wars in Liberia and Sierra Leone, and has also managed conflicts in countries like Niger, in Cote d'Ivoire, and so on and so forth. So, and the instrument is there. For instance, there is a protocol on democracy and good governance. It's going to apply it. The management for the leadership of ECOWAS will stand by and watch some of the leaders, like Alpha Conde of Guinea, change the constitution. And then President Ouattara did that. So Alpha Conde followed, organized them, rushed them, referendum, and the constitution to change it so that he could run for the third term. But the leadership, instead of using the instrument of this protocol that has zero tolerance for taking power by force, not only that, it also says that constitutions must be respected.
Journalists in West Africa complained with regards to the outgoing leadership of ECOWAS that they weren't making themselves available for interviews when it comes to issues concerning ECOWAS. And they complained that ECOWAS has not been visible. Do you think that criticism is fair?
The leadership organizations ought to have taken it up. Because if you have a directorate that are supposed to be playing their part, communication is one of them. And then you have a communication directorate that is not living up to its billings. Who will call them to order? It is the management of ECOWAS. You know, and the directorate of communication, by the way, is under the office of the president of the commission. So you can see that it is a failure, not just of the directorate, but of the commission itself. And then the ECOWAS as a body, if journalists were complaining that they were not getting information, ECOWAS was not communicating what it was doing to the world, then you raise the flag. But like you know, and like the journalists are now saying, that was not addressed. I hope the incoming administration of Touré will take care of that and make sure that ECOWAS tells his own story. There is nobody who can tell your story more than you can do.
What are the two major issues you expect the incoming Dr. Touré's leadership to tackle?
One is security, or the problem of insecurity. You go across, you go to Nigeria, you go to the Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger. These countries are being assaulted by jihadists and terrorists. This is one major issue that this government has to address. And then the incursion of the military that has now tried to negotiate with them and then get them back to the barracks. Okay? That is one. The other is making sure that the protocols are observed, the protocol on good governance, making sure that the principle of democracy is brought back. Next countries, I hear that they are now amending the constitution to ensure that the protocol on democracy and good governance, they can amend it so that it is written in national constitutions, not just written, but implemented.
Paul Ijeme is a global affairs analyst, a former war correspondent, an independent consultant on corporate strategic communications, media, peace and security and elections. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. The African Bar Association says it plans to petition the International Criminal Court over the deaths of African migrants who were killed trying to cross the shared border between Morocco and Spain. At least 23 migrants were killed in the incident last week. Attorney Hannibal Uwefo, chairman of the group that represents African lawyers, says the deaths of the migrants violate international law. He also says Morocco must explain why it used deadly force against fellow Africans who were seeking, in his words, greener pastures. His remarks follow condemnation, shock, and outrage by African civil society and international human rights groups. Moussa Faki, chairman of the African Union Commission, is demanding an immediate investigation into the deaths of the migrants. But Spain's Prime Minister Pedro Sancho praised the joint efforts by authorities in Morocco and Spain to prevent the migrants from crossing into his country. For more reaction to the deaths of the migrants, I reach Hannibal Uwefo, chairman of the African Bar Association.
We need to study more what Europe thinks about Africa and how they treat Africa. Spain is a classic example. Spain is not even a good example of democracy in Europe. The way they treated the separatists from Catalonia clearly demonstrates what they will do to Africans. Morocco calls itself an African country. But unfortunately, Morocco has other ideas. But I bet you Morocco will regret this thing they've done. Morocco is not a good transit point. Their behavior is totally irresponsible. And I believe that for us in the African Bar, the African Union, we have to convene a meeting to decide on the fate of Morocco. Morocco must be suspended from the African Union, because if these things were not sanctioned and authorized by the government of Morocco, we won't be where we are today. We are talking about Ukraine and Russia, and Africa is killing Africans in Africa.
Spain's prime minister has defended the way Morocco and Spain police repelled migrants last week, saying that it was an attack on Spain's borders. What's your reaction to that?
What do you mean by an attack on Spain's border? Killing of migrants? Is it allowed by international law? Of course, Spain can say whatever they like. You can't kill human beings because they are fighting for greener pastures. You can't just kill people simply because you are enforcing your immigration law. Is there any law in Spain that says that immigrants should be murdered in cold blood in conjunction with Morocco? So yeah. We, the African Bar Association, we are saddened, and we believe that Morocco should be suspended from the African Union, should be suspended from anything that has to do with Africa, until we can assess what is the motive of Morocco. Because if Morocco has not displayed anything that has to do with Africa, he wants to go to Europe, he's free to go.
Some people are blaming African governments for not creating the enabling environment for these migrants to thrive. Basically, they are accusing African governments of failing to meet the aspirations of their people who have lost hope and will rather embark on such treacherous journey to seek greener pastures abroad. What do you say to that?
Who are the people creating the troubles in Africa? Who supplies the guns in CARO? Who supplies the guns that are killing people in Nigeria and in Nigeria and all over Africa? Who are the fuelers of the problem in the DROC? What they created in the past is coming home to roost. The African Bank is going to author a letter to the International Criminal Court, who claims to be investigating Ukraine and all that. I just hope that we are going to get justice for this type of thing. You cannot commission an African country to murder Africans on your behalf.
So after presenting a petition to the International Criminal Court to investigate this death of these migrants and calling for the African Union and member states to boycott Morocco, what do you think these actions could do to Morocco?
For us in the African Bar, if Morocco is not able to explain itself well, because under the law you have the right to explain, the right to defend yourself, Morocco should be expelled. It should go and join Europe. That's the way we see it. Unfortunately, this thing is going to continue to happen if action is not taken. I'm going to write a letter to the chairman of the AU tomorrow, with our president and our leader in Africa, President Macky Sall, to take this thing up. This is not about president, this is about African lives.
But Mr. Yuan, for both President Macky Sall of Senegal and Issa Mahamat Faki, the chairperson of the African Union Commission, have both condemned this act, while Mr. Mahamat Faki has called for an independent investigation to determine what really happened. But what's next after an investigation determines what happens? What's next? What should follow?
We, the African Bar does not support those type of statements. While we support our president, Macky Sall, who is the president of Senegal and the chairman of African Union, and we're going to continue to support him because he's doing a good job, but we are going to tell them to elevate the punishment for Morocco beyond what they are saying. It's not about an investigation anymore. It's about Morocco being punished. This mass murder. The African Bar is totally, you know, perturbed by this whole thing, and it cannot fathom why people should be murdered simply because they want to cross. You can accept them and return them back. There are international laws. We're not resorting to murdering people and beating people the way they were doing. We saw the videos. We need to speak about this. Spain must be dealt with by the European Union. Spain must be punished for this thing. Morocco must be expelled from the African Union.
Hannibal Uwefo is the chairman of the African Bar Association. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. In Malawi, several civil society groups say they are pleased with the stepped-up fight against corruption in the Southern African country. The groups also hail what they say was the prompt and decisive action President Lazarus Chakwera took to sideline Vice President Saulos Chilima over allegations of corruption. It follows a recent report on cases the Anti-Corruption Bureau submitted to President Chakwera. It comes after the president announced he was sidelining Vice President Saulos Chilima following allegations of corruption detailed in the report. The vice president is alleged to have received bribes from a businessman who also is accused of paying officials to get government contracts. But his supporters say the allegations are politically motivated. The civil society groups include the Human Rights Defenders Forum, National Advocacy Platform, National Anti-Corruption Alliance, and Youth and Society. For the latest development and reaction of the groups in the fight against graft, I reach Charles Kajoloweka. He is the executive director of the group called Youth and Society.
We would want to commend the Anti-Corruption Bureau for producing this report and submitting this report to the president. They have done diligent work, and within the shortest period time of 21 days, they have been able to produce this report. And the president, again, is really also commended for acting on the report. Already we have seen the president leaving his vice president of delegated official duties. He has also fired the Inspector General of Police, his chief of staff, and has also relieved one board chairperson of the PPDA, which is responsible for public procurement. That demonstrates some decisiveness on the part of the president.
Some people are suggesting that perhaps the Anti-Corruption Bureau might need international assistance in order to boost the effort to fight corruption in Malawi, because in its report, people said that the president was quoted as saying that the report was substandard and did not meet proper requirements. Your response to that?
We don't agree with the president describing the report as substandard. Perhaps the president had a different understanding or interpretation of the legal requirements of the bureau in reporting to him. The law provides that the Anti-Corruption Bureau shall report to the president. Basically, this is a general progress report on the work of the bureau. And it is not about an investigative report. So it seems the president was expecting an investigative report, which the bureau did not provide. That's why the bureau did not include specific details that he could have been contained in the investigative report. And I think it was really a question of managing the president's expectations. The expectation was that he would receive an investigative report detailing, everything, including the evidence and so forth, which is not the case. Yeah, while we also appreciate that there is need for international support, you might be aware already that the Bureau has been supported by various actors, including the UK government. You would recall that this investigation basically is emerging from an investigation of the National Crimes Agency of the UK government. And therefore, there is this support coming from the international community.
What would you say is the state of the fight against corruption at the moment, following the decision taken by the president that culminated from the report presented by the Anti-Corruption Bureau or the ACB?
I would say that we have now as a country intensified the fight against organized and serious corruption, and we have an opportunity to turn things around in this country when it comes to fighting corruption. We seem to have very committed law enforcement agencies that are willing to take an extra step beyond what we have conventionally been doing. And when you look at the individuals implicated here, are high-level government officials in the current administration. And the president is even taking those hard choices including, you know, on his vice president, the chief of staff, you know, the inspector general of police. These are senior government officials.
So what were the two major recommendations that the civil society groups came up with in order to help in the fight against corruption?
The first recommendation and the demand is that those implicated must pave way for investigations, prosecutions, and justice. Section 12 of the Constitution of the country, you know, critically espouses trust as a pertinent constitutional principle in the exercise of state power. And those that have been implicated in this, you know, corruption scandal, obviously have soiled the trust reposed in them. As such, it is only proper that they, you know, step aside. And this applies to all individuals, including the vice president, who is still in office. The second one is to ensure that we expedite the anti-corruption reforms. For example, a government has been talking about establishing the special financial crimes court. And this has really stalled for a long time, and we have been calling on government to expedite the establishment of this court so that we can begin to see speedy, you know, prosecution of these corruption cases.
Charles Kajoloweka is the executive director of the group called Youth and Society. He spoke with me from Nzuzu, Malawi. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Tote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, a UN investigative panel is calling on the government of Ethiopia to end conflict-related right violations on its territory and bring the perpetrators of crimes to justice. The commission has submitted its first report to the UN Human Rights Council. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
The three-member International Commission of Human Rights Experts on Ethiopia reports that violations of international human rights, humanitarian, and refugee law continue and appear to be committed with impunity. Commission Chair Kari Betty Murungi says the panel is alarmed by ongoing atrocities against civilians, including events reported in the Oromia region. This is a reference to the recent killings of an estimated 250 people, mostly from the Amhara ethnic group, allegedly by the rebel Oromo Liberation Army.
Any spread of violence against civilians fueled either by hate speech or incitement to ethnic-based or gender-based violence are early warning indicators and a precursor for further atrocity crimes. These and the protracted humanitarian crisis, including blockades to food and medical aid, supplies and services, poses grave risk to the Ethiopian civilian population and to people in the region.
The commission was established last December at a special session on the human rights situation in Ethiopia since November 3, 2020. That was when the government's military offensive in Tigray began in response to attacks by the Tigray People's Liberation Front, or TPLF. Ethiopia has rejected as unwarranted the adoption of the resolution that established the commission. Ethiopia's ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Zenebi Kabedi Kocho, however, has told the council his government will cooperate with the commission despite ongoing reservations. He adds that discussions have begun.
The country is now turning a page. The government of Ethiopia has decided to seek peaceful end to the conflict. An inclusive national dialogue is launched to address political problems across the country. The government has taken numerous confidence-building measures.
The ambassador says his government has declared an indefinite humanitarian truce in northern Ethiopia. As a result, he notes humanitarian assistance is reaching all those in need. The commission says it has begun its work and welcomes the cooperation of the Ethiopian government. The commission adds it believes it can contribute to furthering accountability for the many violations that have occurred since the start of the conflict in Tigray and that are still ongoing. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Zambia recently marked World Albinism Day, but many of the 30,000 people with the inherited genetic condition in the country live in fear. Their bones and other organs are in high demand by witch doctors, with some body parts selling for as much as $75,000 in neighboring Tanzania. More than 20 albinos are killed in Zambia each year. For VOA, Kathy Shaw reports from the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
As in many African countries, people living with albinism are murdered or have their body parts taken in bloody attacks for use in rituals. People with albinism, whose very pale skin lack pigment, also suffer incessant teasing and bullying from peers. Benson Walia, age 23, shares his experience.
Let me just say a challenge which I usually face each and every day is discrimination. Most of the people in our community, they do discriminate any person with albinism. I think that's what is affecting a lot of albinos out there. Most of our friends, they would not like to interact with us. Okay, they would not, you know, want to include albinos in most of activities, or like maybe playing football, you know, and doing some other activities.
The Albino Foundation of Zambia has been campaigning for equal treatment of people living with albinism and for an end to the misconception that their bodies can be used to enrich people or guarantee good health. John Chitty is the executive director of the group.
Body parts of albino persons are used in certain rituals and magic. This can be used to cure diseases and make money. So we have people who have been on the hunt, hunted down to attack and to kill persons with albinism for their body parts, because they believe that if they use certain parts of their bodies in rituals, then they can make money and they can make, or they can cure certain diseases. Persons with albinism are living in fear. They are not really enjoying their full human rights, because all of the time they have to worry about who is behind them, and many of them have lost their lives.
Albinism is a genetic condition that results in the absence of pigmentation in the eyes, skin, and hair. Due to the unique makeup of their skin, people living with albinism are susceptible to specific health conditions, especially skin cancers. The Human Rights Commission of Zambia spokesperson, Mwelwa Mlea, acknowledges that more needs to be done to address human rights violations against people living with albinism in Zambia.
Particularly, we have been concerned with their complaints that there's inadequate support from government when it comes to the lotion that protects their skin from being damaged by heat. And they have had concerns on those issues. And the Human Rights Commission, we are engaging the government to ensure that there is health and social welfare being provided to persons with albinism.
In 2013, the UN Human Rights Council adopted two resolutions calling on states to take all measures necessary to protect people with albinism. The UN also called on states to ensure accountability through the conduct of impartial, speedy, and effective investigations into crimes against albinos. I'm Kathy Short for VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
I'm a try.
Right now, it's time for music from our African collection. Let's go.
Yeah. Now you're back on my flight.
Yeah. Thank you. فن وهندسه ايش كل ده بقى درج حلنجي ومزاجنجي بس جد مش كلامنجي ده فتني هواسني تعبني مريحني اشواقي مرجحني
Falling in love,
Beatles music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Saida Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, he who swallows a complete coconut have absolute trust in his aims. I'm your host, Peter Clotier, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.